content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The August issue of Our State magazine is entitled The Lunch Break, and it features articles about favorite lunch spots around the state. Busy North Carolinians, mill workers and lawyers, farmers and firefighters have always found time for a refreshing recess. Around noon, join the loyal lunch crowd at the oldest restaurant in Raleigh, a BLT institution in Chapel Hill, a Wilmington tavern that's home to a burger with bragging rights, and more. Slide into a booth and let your responsibilities slip away, if only for an hour. Let's eat. The cover photo shows a picture of a massive BLT sandwich from Merritt's Grill in Chapel Hill. But first up is the welcome message, A Life in Lunch Breaks, by the editor, Elizabeth Hudson. There was a time when the sight of a brown paper lunch sack on the kitchen table meant something special was about to happen. A field trip, a ticket to adventure. Inside was a sandwich, Ruth's pimento cheese on Merita bread or bologna with yellow mustard, and a canned drink wrapped in foil, my name carefully printed in black magic marker on a strip of masking tape. I couldn't tell you where we went. The zoo, the state capitol, Moorhead Planetarium, where the seats tilted back and the ceiling dissolved into sky. But I remember the lunches, eaten on splintered picnic tables. Bread soft in the heat, drinks sweating through the foil, the feel of being, briefly, elsewhere. At farmer school, I loved the cafeteria line, steam rising from behind the glass in the anticipation of something hot and hearty. Baked spaghetti, chicken pie, ladled out in generous scoops. In high school, I lived for Pizza Fridays, rectangular slices doled out like playing cards. By senior year, a baked potato bar showed up, peak sophistication in the 1980s, and we all felt slightly more grown up than we actually were. In college, lunch was whatever I could scrounge between classes, a granola bar, something from a drive-thru. Later in the jobs that shaped my early 20s, a video store, a bookshop. Lunch meant around 30 minutes in a break room that smelled faintly of microwave popcorn. I ate fast. I watched the clock. Then came my first office job. In Greensboro at this magazine, 28 years ago, I was the girl who answered the phones. And for the first time, I had a full hour for lunch. I'd drive to Jay's Deli at Friendly Center, order a hot dog, and sit at a small table. That hour was more than a break. It was a beginning. Now, lunch takes me all over the state. Chicken salad in a church fellowship hall after giving a talk. A crab cake sandwich from a seafood shack at the coast. I've filled entire notebooks with the meals I've eaten in roadside diners and ambitious new kitchens. I've tasted North Carolina, slowly and deliberately, one bite at a time. The greatest field trip I ever could have imagined. In 2009, when I became editor-in-chief, our publisher and I began having lunch together once a month, always on a Tuesday. We still do. Nearly 200 meals so far. We rotate through our regulars. A patio table at Printworks. A window seat at Undercurrent. A booth at Country Barbecue. We talk first of work, then of other things. Movies we've seen, places we've been and hope to go. People we love. And as the years go on, people we miss. Lunch, by now, is less about the food and more of a private calendar. I measure the days, the months, the seasons, the years, carried in brown bags and styrofoam trays across lunch counters and county lines. I'm grateful for the hour. For the pause before the plates are cleared, before the chairs scrape back, the doors swing open, and time ticks forward. And now I'll take you on a descriptive journey through this month's photo essay entitled Mountain Muse, featuring Wes Jefferson in Ashe County. Small-town charm meets big-time talent in West Jefferson, an Ashe County community known for art and creativity. And the opening photo is West Jefferson's walkable Jefferson Avenue is lined with retail shops, restaurants, galleries, and more. And it just looks like a quintessential small-town downtown with angled parking spaces all along each side of the street. At the Ashe County Arts Council's annual studio tour, taking place actually this weekend, August 2nd and 3rd, visitors watch artists paint canvases, fire clay, and blow glass. Executive Director Johnny Ray encourages guests to preview pieces at the Arts Council's headquarters, then enjoy the off-the-beaten-path studios. It's a big highlight, the views along the way, she says. You have to get that personal connection with the artists. And we have some photos here. We have a little girl playing a violin with her sister, probably dressed like her in the background, watching her. She's probably maybe 8 or 10 years old. Past exhibits at the Arts Council Gallery and store have included works by quilt artist Sarah Ruth Phipps and The House in the Woods by Tanya Bottomley. The organization also hosts events like a literary festival and the Ashe County Bluegrass and Old Time Fiddlers Convention, which draws all ages of performers and enthusiasts. And we have in the one that's entitled the Quilt Artist by Sarah Ruth Phipps, looks like an old-timey, I don't know, I have one of these, a pincushion that's shaped like an apple with the little strawberry hanging off of it and with quilted pins in there and all sorts of other embellishments in the background. And then the one that is House in the Woods by Tanya Bottomley is more of not such bright colors as the other one, but it's more of a muted blues and oranges and greens, a little bit more modern looking. And then we have a picture of an art sculpture made from, looks like perhaps gas cans and saw blades and other pieces of metal put together, creating a heron in front of the Ashe County Arts Council Gallery. Okay, we're looking at now Doe Ridge Pottery. Inside an old tobacco warehouse, Nate Fields places a large slab of wet clay onto a mold shaped like a tobacco leaf. Fields, who owns Doe Ridge Pottery with his wife Ashley, tucks in the edges and presses a wet sponge into the clay to ease the slab into the mold. As he works, leaf veins begin to appear. The piece will become a platter, a nod to the building's history. And it shows him doing that, where he's laying, the mold is inverted, the relief side up, and he's pressing the clay into that mold and around the edges of that mold that will then become a platter. And then we see some pictures of the finished platters have been baked and glazed. Some are triangular, some like the one he was working on is a banana leaf shade. There's cups and mugs and small plates and other type of platters. They host clay classes at their gallery, one of the can't-miss stops on the Ashe County Studio Tour. Next up is Florence Thomas Art School. A mule pulling a cart, a farmhouse at the edge of a field, a dirt path with mountain views, paintings by the artist Florence Thomas, which rotate on display at the art school founded in her honor, illustrate scenes of rural life in Appalachia. The nonprofit school offers workshops on painting, photography, sculpture, and stained glass, among other mediums, fulfilling Thomas's goal of prioritizing art education. And we have a couple of students standing at easels, painting a scene of a mountain and a tree. And in the facing page, we have some work hanging from the ceiling that is with textiles and so forth. And students take part in landscape painting workshop at the Florence Thomas Art School, which honors the life and works of the Ashe County artist. Untitled oil paintings reflect Thomas's serene style, and they're somewhat impressionistic in that they're not, they have, you know, muted colors, and they're not quite defined, but they're still very beautiful. Next up is the Ashe County Mural Tour. Meander at your own pace on a self-guided walking tour of 13 colorful downtown murals featuring themes of faith, whimsy, mountain life, and Ashe County history. You can download the STQRY guide app and search Ashe County Mural Tours to find works like local artists like Whitney Stewart Landwarmer, who has painted three murals downtown, including this one and Tree of Appalachia. And the one that is entitled this one is a mural of a young woman with a rather solemn face. In the background is a male farmer. And then there's all this produce, mostly blueberries and blackberries. I see some dogwood vines, some dried hydrangeas, flowers, dogwood flowers, petals. And she's holding a few raspberries in her hand, it looks like. And the other one is entitled, that was called This One, and the other one is entitled Tree of Appalachia. And it has a hummingbird and a tree, but the tree is filled with all sorts of fruits and flowers, mostly flowers. There are some blackberries dangling, and there's a small swing on the mural. And the guide that you can download, the guide app, is, I'll say it and spell it for you, STQRY guide. And it's S like Sam, T like Tango, Q like Quebec, R like Romeo, and Y like Yankee. That's the STQRY guide app, and search for Ashe County Mural Tours. Next up is the R.T. Morgan Art Gallery. Artist R.T. Morgan paints both abstract and impressionistic scenes, some featuring natural objects and animals in vibrant colors like Gentle Soul, which depicts a black bear against a bright red sky. Morgan trained at Appalachian State University and St. Andrews Presbyterian College. Today, he displays his paintings and sculptures at his eponymous West Jefferson Gallery. And it shows a picture of him actually painting an impressionistic painting of flowers, colorful. There's purples and whites and reds and oranges and greens in that. And then a snippet of another impressionistic painting hanging on the wall with a, you can see part of a barn and a fall. Looks like it's in the fall season with the color of the tree leaves are sort of burgundy. Next up is Ashe County Cheese. North Carolina's oldest and largest cheese manufacturer produces 35,000 to 40,000 pounds of it each week, all from regionally sourced milk. Ashe County Cheese sells approximately 30 varieties of cheese bricks, but the most popular product in its downtown shop is the squeaky curds. Made from 5,000-gallon milk tanks, three cows is the name of the installation, art installation. Three Cows was designed by the late artist Stephen Willingham and created by welding students from Ashe County High School in 2011. And sure enough, there are three large cows on the outside of the made from the 5,000-gallon milk tanks. It's an installation, and then front of it is a planting area, a raised flower bed made of stone. And the facing page has all these different cheese curds and cheese products, hoop cheese, Carolina cheddar cheese, and a sharp cheddar cold-packed cheese food. And it looks like that would be some blue cheese and crackers. It looks like a little spread ready for somebody to dig into it. Next, we'll head to the West Jefferson Hotel. There's a great amount of affection for old buildings, says Mark Beck, whose restoration of the circa 1917 hotel used wood reclaimed from the original beams. When restorations of the 1917 hotel began in 2019, locals donated items that had once been inside, including an original telephone. Today, regional art adds to the mountain luxury feel. And it is an old telephone with the receiver hanging on from a hook and the bells at the top, and it has the turn handle on the right side. Very, very old. And then we have a picture, it looks like coming up the staircase with the blonde wood doors and flooring and wallpapered walls with various artwork hanging in there in the hallway. Craft Bistro is up next. Diners at Craft Bistro can peer into the open kitchen and watch as chefs lightly grill lamb chops, pan-sear scallops, and slowly stir wild mushroom risotto. The upscale eatery, known for its award-winning steak, is owned by restaurateur and chef Jared Yelton and his wife Becky Pike, and is housed in the original Parkway Theater. Craft Bistro favorites include pan-seared duck breast, maple mesquite glazed salmon with risotto, and Creole mussels with white wine chorizo broth. And they all look very appealing, very tasty, very colorful, with the bright broccoli and the more yellow-colored risotto and mashed potatoes. And it all looks very, very tasty. Church of the Frescoes. After apprenticing in Italy, North Carolinian Benjamin F. Long IV offered to paint frescoes for the parish of the Holy Communion. Three of his reverent images, Mary Great with Child, John the Baptist, and the Mystery of Faith, can be viewed at St. Mary's, one of the parish's two churches. During the 1970s, Ben Long created these lauded paintings using a tedious process called fresco, which entails applying ground pigments to wet plaster. And they're both at the front of this church. In the center is the Mystery of Faith, which is actually shows the resurrected Christ behind the crucified Christ on a cross. And in sort of ethereal colors from rising from the dead. And then to the left is Mary Great with Child. And to the right is John the Baptist, a picture of John the Baptist, the fresco of John the Baptist. Definitely worth a stop to see that. Old Barn Winery. The name of this winery honors the structure that holds it. Much of Old Barn Winery's rustic interior wood is original, and some is reclaimed from other barns on owners Greg and Robin Sexton's farmland around Ashe County. Here, visitors can sit under a pergola, sip on a wine slushy or one of the barn's many varietals, and enjoy a refreshing end to a summer stay in West Jefferson. On Fridays and Saturdays, the free Old Barn Winery trolley shuttles riders the short distance between Ashe County Cheese and the estate. So you have this, the old-time trolley in red and green and gold. And then they have, you show the front of the estate with its wide open front doors and various tables under umbrellas and under the pergola. And then two wine glasses, one with a white wine and one with a red wine, shown in photos. Next up is the article entitled, The Taste of Time. Across nearly a century of service, the Mecca restaurant has established itself as a lunchtime staple in our state capital. Meet the family behind the famed eatery and the regular who's preserving its legacy. Their arrival is reliable, ritualistic even. The woman at table number 2, who returns each Tuesday for the fried chicken special, and the judges who come in a pair on weekday mornings before hearing courtroom debates. They slide into dark wooden booths with tall mirrors rippled by time and flanked by dim, decorative sconces. They sit across rustic red tables or at the bar on swiveling, high-backed stools. They order a meatloaf or a barbecue. They converse or fall silent with reverence. And like most of their fellow diners, they come back. This routine is sort of a pilgrimage to their own kind of Mecca, just like the lawyers who practiced before them or the lawmakers who won their elections a generation prior. Because in Raleigh, a city that has undergone countless rebirths and transformations, few things are as unchanging and dependable as the domed state capitol, the oak trees, and the Mecca restaurant. For nearly a century, the Mecca has stood as a testament to the timeless appeal of home-style cooking, with dishes ranging from roasted lemon herb chicken to fluffy stacks of chocolate chip pancakes that draw repeat customers. That loyal following, coupled with the abiding love and unfailing work ethic of three generations of the Dombalis family, kept the doors open at this narrow, no-frills destination as nearly all its contemporaries vanished. Opened in 1930 by Nick and Helen Dombalis, the Mecca has been through several revisions but has remained at 13 East Martin Street, a block west of Moore Square, and two blocks south of the Capitol Building since 1937. At one time, the ceiling was replaced. At another, late night hours were extended, or lasagna was introduced, or the second floor was opened for dining. The changes have been so few, they're easily recounted. The biggest change occurred in 2018. After 47 years of working at the restaurant, third-generation owner Paul Dombalis had worn himself to the bone, and he needed to step away. "When I started working there, it was a big family thing," he says, from his retirement home in Curry Beach. "People started passing away, my grandparents, then my dad. Then it was me and my mom for quite a while. She went up there well into her 90s, but she couldn't do it anymore. Then I was kind of by myself." Paul had it drilled into him from an early age that to run the restaurant, you had to be there in person, and he took that message to heart. In his final years running the Mecca, he spent 7 days a week there. His grandfather Nick had been the same way. The Dombalis family tells a story of the time the patriarch fell asleep in one of the restaurant booths, having worked himself into a slumber. "The blood, sweat, and tears that my grandparents and my parents put in there, it's very important to me," Paul says. "That's why I stayed longer at the Mecca than I probably should have." Luckily for the restaurant's faithful, one of them was willing to step up. Greg Hatem had been coming to the Mecca since the 80s. As an NC State student from Roanoke Rapids, he frequented the restaurant with friends whenever he could scrape together a few dollars. He consistently returned for signature dishes like the fried chicken, decades later bringing his children and establishing rituals of their own. "I'm no different than thousands of other people. The Mecca has just been really that wonderful, safe place to go visit with the community and have a great lunch," Hatem says. Except he is different. Hatem is a real estate developer and preservationist. By 2018, he had founded at least five downtown restaurants, bars, or cafes, including The Pit, Authentic Barbecue, and City, a Lebanese restaurant whose name means grandmother in Arabic, a nod to his heritage. The Mecca would be the first under his Empire Eats banner that Hatem hadn't founded himself, but his strong emotional ties to the place made this step feel necessary, he says. "Our promise to regulars is we're going to keep it the Dombalis' Mecca," Hatem says, and he has. Hatem pulled up new flooring upstairs and returned to the original hardwood, kept the menu intact, and insists that regulars have barely detected the shift. Hatem already had almost two decades of experience running successful restaurants like the Morning Times Cafe within historic renovated buildings. The track record was there, and just as important, so was the relationship. He'd been coming to the Mecca regularly since Paul's parents, John and Floy, ran it. "The Mecca is all about family, and customers are extended family," said Mary Dombalis Winstead, Paul's sister who still lives in Raleigh. "We knew we were passing it along to someone who would carry on the tradition and legacy." Despite its location in the heart of downtown, the Mecca is tucked into a narrow building. That may explain the restaurant's illuminated exterior calling passerbys from the nearest intersection. A T-shaped neon marquee reads Mecca across in green and restaurant down in red, both in capital letters with the story-high sign. The facade is painted a deep blue, standing out from the rest of the block. In the warm months, a waterfall of fuchsia flowers spills from above the front door. Neon signs with the restaurant's name adorn windows flanking the entrance. All that retro flash underscores the unparalleled role the Mecca has played in almost a century of life in the capital city. From the boxed lunches that were prepared for Army troops in the 50s, to the two retired state Supreme Court chief justices who brought their own grapefruits every morning. Those who've come to dine have become a part of the Mecca's history, too. There was the man who, when asked about his favorite places to eat in Raleigh, said, "Upstairs at the Mecca and downstairs at the Mecca." There are endless thank yous, including the note Mary found in her mom's house from a customer who recounted the story of their parents' 1943 honeymoon dinner at the restaurant. The groom forgot his wallet and was allowed to return the next day to pay his bill. There was the time Paul and Mary's brother, Nick, a big personality who died in 2020, overheard a fellow lawyer tell someone, "You must have went to the Mecca for lasagna because I smell the garlic on you." The Mecca persists in many ways because of its commitment to service. The Dombalis family and Haydom both know this. It's why the backs of the employees' uniforms now read, "He profits most who serves the best." That, paired with good food and its endearing service, is what defines the Mecca. "It's been here longer than just about anyone you know," Haydom says. "There's heritage, but that DNA still moves forward." The Mecca restaurant is located at 13 East Martin Street in Raleigh, and they have a website. You can check them out at Mecca, M-E-C-C-A, -restaurant.com. That's Mecca, -restaurant.com. And I'll go back and describe a couple of the photos with this. Interestingly enough, I graduated high school with Greg Haydom and know him quite well. And we have the picture where it was describing this really huge sign, Mecca, parallel to the street, and then restaurant perpendicular to the street. It opened, it's the oldest restaurant in our state capital in Raleigh. In 2014, the building that housed the iconic spot was designated a historic landmark. The Mecca's interior hasn't changed much since Nick Dombalis opened the restaurant with his wife, Helen, in 1930. And you see the bar with the swivel chairs, leather-covered swivel chairs, and the booths along the wall. It is a narrow restaurant. I've eaten there many times. All right, there's a picture of Greg Haydom and one of his little girls. And the Mecca continues its legacy of serving home-style dishes like lemon herb chicken, which looks delicious. And we'll end this episode with, it's Above and Beyond, one of the newer sections of the magazine, celebrating North Carolina from new heights. And so we have a drone footage here, and I'm going to read the caption. It's about Raleigh. Peaceful country setting or urban oasis? We'll take both. Surrounded by lush pastures and forest, NC State's Randley Dairy Heritage Museum teaches visitors how a dairy farm operates with the capital city's skyline peeking over the trees. And it's, you see farmland with cows, and just past the tree line, you see all the skyscrapers of downtown Raleigh. The juxtaposition of that is quite interesting. Well, that music means it's time for us to end for today. We've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired and is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For questions or comments, give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long till next time.